Hello, I'm Stephen Goodwin. It's Tuesday, May the 6th, and welcome to episode number 22 of The Beer Crate, the podcast for ale lovers the world over. Each week, we'll be looking at the world of beer and brewing, investigating local, national, and international breweries, and of course, testing a wide selection of beers, ales, and ciders. Lager boys need not apply. Coming up on today's show, we have news, the drinker's diary, that most vital of beer ingredients, water, the first of our two-part interview with Jan Lakota, quick tastings, and our world-famous Try It Before You Die section. So let's get cracking. News. And the first apparently carbon-neutral beer has been produced by Adnams. East Green is a bottled 4.3% golden ale available from various pubs and Tesco. The MD of Adnams, Andy Wood, said that they looked at the whole supply chain to establish the most eco-friendly mechanisms. As you'd expect, this involved local ingredients to reduce transport costs, but also, more interestingly, the very light maltings present. Apparently, if the sales of East Green match Broadside, the carbon footprint is the equivalent of taking 65 cars off the road each year. The cask version of the beer is expected within the month, as soon as Adnams have finished producing their low-carbon pump clip. May is Canberra's Mild Month, with XX Mild, the recently crowned champion mild of East Anglia, being promoted by Green King. Licensees ordering it get a promotional kit. Us punters just get the beer. But I suppose it's a start. And with summer approaching, Basingstoke Council have a novel approach to improving your quality time when outside with a beer, by forcing you to drink it from a plastic cup. Apart from the eco non-recyclability of plastic and the fact that beer tastes awful from plastic cups, I'm surprised at the blatantly unpopular move taking place so shortly before the local elections. Drinker's Diary. And the first of our four festivals this week is in Banbury, at the TA Centre, Oxford Road. This runs from the 8th of May to the 10th of May. Macclesfield is holding its 14th beer festival this week, from the 9th of May to the 10th of May, being held at Macclesfield Rugby Club. Despite the expensive tickets, they do sell out early apparently, and Friday and Saturday evening, booking early is advised. Moving to rugby of a different kind is the 25th Rugby Beer Festival, taking place at the Bowling Club, Bruce Williams Way, Rugby. This runs from the 14th of May to the 17th of May. And finally, the Stratford-upon-Avon Racecourse is holding its second Beer and Cider Festival from the 16th to the 17th of May. For those that have realised this is a weekend of football, they will apparently be screening the FA Cup. The importance of water. One of the lesser discussed ingredients of beer is water. H2O takes up more than 90% of the total volume of beer. So what's so different about it? Well, most water isn't actually H2O. It's H2O with traces of calcium, magnesium, sodium, zinc, copper, and various sulfates and carbonates. Each of these has a slight but noticeable effect on the beer. The most common distinction in water is between hard and soft. Hard water has more minerals such as calcium and magnesium, and this is often featured in local beers such as those from Munich. Minerals such as calcium produce acid and activate the enzymes which affects the balance with the alkaline of malts. Hard water beers with calcium often produce a sparkling beer. Conversely, soft water produces a more mild, gentle kind of flavour and often used in the light pilsners. The reactive ingredient in beer is naturally yeast, and there are various minerals that change the way it's produced, or not. When magnesium is present, it encourages the production of enzymes, but can cause a sourness when there's more than around 20 milligrams present. This is in contrast to sodium, for example, which features heavily in beer used by seaside breweries, and is often filtered out because a lot of sodium can kill yeast. Other minerals, such as the various sulfates which are present, introduce a dry, sharp flavour to the beer, while zinc and copper will increase the yeast metabolism and can create cloudiness. Although the quantities of this and other minerals appear in most water, the ratios vary, and so the different tastes appear depending on location, and which are filtered by the specific brewery to create their own special brew. Pardon the pun. We now have the first of a two-part interview with Jan Lakota, the legal advisor for the Brewers of Europe. So, Jan, welcome to the Beer Crate.
Thank you, Stephen.
We're here in the Brewers of Europe bar in Brussels, and we've already learned from Mr. Delo there are a number of issues that are handled here. As the legal advisor and fiscal guru, I would imagine you're involved with pretty much every situation.
Well, yes, initially it was the case, but as I as I'm here already a couple of years, so luckily for me, so now I have a quite narrow field of action. So I began as when I took over the job from my predecessor in 2004 as legal advisor. He was in charge of food law, competition issues, fiscal matters, as well as some other economic and legal affairs, which luckily for me ended at that time. And now I'm much more, I work much more only on fiscal affairs and some competition issues like beer delivery contracts.
So are the fiscal matters the narrow focus you were talking about?
Yes, yes, and in fact it's, that takes most of my time. Now we had quite intensive work during the last 2 years on the so-called minimum rates directive, which sets up minimum excise levels for products like beer, where there was a commission proposal asking to increase that level, which would, for example, put higher taxes for beer in the Czech Republic or for a lovely tourist destination like Malta.
So is there a problem in differences in duty between them?
Well, yes, that's always the delicate balance. So now we will experience in the coming months with a proposal of the Commission released just 1 week ago. But coming rightly to your question, there is a problem when there is a when the level of duty between countries are really different in terms of, let's say, 5 to 8 times higher, which in fact we experience with a large producing country like Germany, where the duty is 3 times lower as in Denmark, but already 8 times lower as in Sweden. So you can imagine Swedish beer consumers going to Germany and coming back with quite a large amount of beer crates.
Because this extra duty is something born of the end consumer.
Well, yes, yes. So, in fact, as long as the transport costs and other associated costs are lower for the purchase abroad and coming back from this cross-border activity, then they choose to do it. So. And for the timing, this is the an example that is really clear. And some cases in the Court of Justice were also already lodged against Sweden. But I must not forget also against the UK.
Oh, yes. Would it be better to have a flat rate across Europe?
Well, when we only take the tax amount that is in a product, talking about putting everything at the same level won't be fair for any government, because we will end up quarreling what is the right level. That's one thing, because excise duty so on beer represents quite a low amount of revenues to our national budget. Maybe with the exception of the UK.
You've mentioned the UK twice now. Are we the worst offenders?
No. No. When it comes to taxation of beer, I will not... because when it comes to also taxation of wine, many countries don't put a tax on wine. So we don't see the differences... are in fact between those who don't tax wine and those who tax wine. Between spirits, the taxes are already higher, and we see that the geographical pattern does not always respond to a national policy, because, for example, Finland, Ireland and Malta are among the highest taxing countries for spirits. But when it comes to beer, so the top five, when I say in the highest amounts, so is Norway, Finland, Ireland, United Kingdom and Sweden, followed then by Turkey. So we see that in fact everything is concentrated in the northern part of Europe, because those that follow them in the taxation levels are already half of what, let's say, Sweden imposes.
Are these tax rates complicated by the specific beer in question? because I know that over a certain ABV some drinks stop being taxed as beer or cider and becomes wine and spirits.
No, there's in fact a European legislation which sets the structures of taxation and defines what's in which category a beverage should fall. This is also linked to the customs combined nomenclature when it comes to cider. So this is the threshold level for cider. However, now we see quite a strange, well, maybe not strange, but a unique trend of wine being moved upwards due to favorable taxation, but also we see the appearance of low alcohol content wines of 6%. This is allowed, but then you will see a direct competition between wine and cider.
Is this a problem you'll have to deal with?
Luckily, no. That's not. We have already enough concerns for beer because, first of all, so the different taxation levels between countries, but also the indirect competition between beer and wine in many markets where, let's say, wine has a limited, has a zero rate, and where beer, for example, has a rate of €0 rate, when then, for example, beer might have more than €2, and this is the case for Italy, which is a large wine producing country. They also produce a lot of intermediate products like vermouths and beer has a high taxation, and although Italy is among the major producers in Europe due to its production capacities.
So what would you say are your normal day-to-day problems?
There were three major issues. First of all, making people understand that in fact there exists a certain kind of discrimination between fermented beverages, because beer is the only fermented beverage that is taxed in many countries, whereas I don't want to blame wine or cider or perry, but they don't have a tax imposed. However, we don't call for a tax for those beverages. Second thing is to try to is also to put beer or beer producers in a right competitive level, which in fact they managed to do it compared to other drinks. And third, I would say, is achieve a single voice of the whole sector on taxation issues, which is in fact difficult for also for due to tax systems, production size, and the difference between small and major beer producers, as well as, well, I would say the approach of the consumers.
With all the billions of euro we spend on beer and all the people working in the industry, you would have thought that the governments would want to keep taxes lower, so make us more friendly towards them.
Well, in fact, it depends which point of view we take. Because if we take the point of view of the authorities, then they will say, we just need revenue, so we need to tax a product that provides us that revenue. But that's true, but of course to a certain amount. And you might say the same about petrol or cosmetics. So, second thing, I would say, the consumers don't defend enough strong any attempt of authorities to tax beer. Because we see that every time that there's, for example, an attempt to tax beer, so there's not enough mobilization, whether that is at national or at European level, when we had the case at with the so-called Minimum Wage Directive. However, I must say that the protests mainly came from the beer sector, because of the mobilization of the different players.
So can you push any issues onto local governments?
That's, well, in fact, that's our also major policy. So that, in fact, we respect national government's position, and what we do from the Brewers of Europe side is, in fact, coordinate, we monitor and coordinate any action that we can undertake. Moreover, we think that local policies are more adapted to local conditions. If you try to, as I mentioned before, so if you try to set a unique tax framework, a unique rate, then the discussion will take a lot of time. And we have seen it with other taxes like the value-added tax. So they are discussing it now for 2 years, I think, since the first proposal came in. So then now, if they want to set a unique company tax rate, so we already see that Ireland is opposing it, as well as, let's say, Estonia. So you see, it's not an easy issue, and this is something that, when we think tax sovereignty, is, I think, the last fortress that every country wishes to maintain.
Do the smaller countries, such as Estonia, hit extra hard just to have an impact just because they're small?
Well, I wouldn't give the example of Estonia on this file. However, their neighbours, Latvia, yes, they are opposing to any measure of increase different tax levels. Now it's for beer, but also for certain other products. And in fact, I must say that Baltic states are a good example of development of a beer culture. I would advise people to go to Lithuania or Latvia and visit the microbreweries and see, for example, how beer-related gastronomy has developed, because this was something that you don't see, in fact, almost anywhere in traditional beer countries. So that is something that if the auditors can, then they should explore.
So what types of beer are they producing?
Well, of course, now if we have different international players on that market, so they deliver also Pilsner beers, but I must say that when we are still talking about the Baltic countries, I must say that their beer is a little bit heavier, but also a little bit stronger. So it's 6 degree alcohol, then we move more than 14 degree in Plato, so...
Thinking back to law, one of the emails I regularly get is silly laws. You know, are there any in the beer world?
Well, I'm not aware of any law that is in place, but probably I think that there were a lot of proposals concerning, in fact, members of a parliament trying to vote a law forbidding sales in a public places, but then they realized that, for example, they wouldn't obtain beer in their parliament, so they withdraw from their proposal. So,
and we'll return to Jan next week. Quick tastings. In this section, we give a brief yet discriminating summary of a number of different beers from around the world. All have been personally tasted and graded. Naturally, everyone has different tastes, and these are mine, so your mileage may vary. Sion Kolsch from Sion. Kolsch is the generic term for any beer brewed in Cologne, Germany, and is seen throughout the city. This specific Kolsch is smooth, mildly hoppy, and with a refreshing taste. It's light in colour and texture, but not really a pils, despite its look and feel. It might be considered a simple beer, but the uncomplicated nature doesn't detract from the fact it's enjoyable. When I had this, it was served in 220ml glasses, so you'd need a lot for its 4.8% alcohol to have any effect. Not that that matters. It scores a decent 7 out of 10. Fru Kolsch from Fru. This is another Pils beer, like the Sion Kolsch, and also clocks in at 4.8%. This one differs primarily in the fact that the hoppy aftertaste grows in the mouth, adding a touch of extra character. Other than that, they are fairly similar, no doubt to the similarity of their local ingredients, but due to its slight improvement in taste, I have to award it a slight improvement in score. 7.5 out of 10. Kronbacher Pils from Kronbacher. This is a light ale with a straight, clean taste without anything offensive in there. It does have a malty mouthfeel, which holds well, and is quite fulsome for an amber colour beer. That said, it has nothing much to offer the Uwe, so at 4.8%, I can only give it a 5.5 out of 10. Kostritzer Schwarzbier from Kostritzer Schwarzbier Brauerei. Even those with a limited grasp of German will have spotted that Schwarzbier Brauerei means black beer brewery. And the beer is called black beer, so it's no surprise that this beer is solid black with a light foam head. What is surprising is the hollow malt taste on the tongue, with a watery aftertaste in the throat. It's 4.8% and okay to drink, but a little too gassy for this style of darker beer. 6 out of 10. Try before you die. In this section of the show, we will cast a discerning eye over the best beers that this world has to offer. We shall mention its history, the brewery behind the beer, and why we feel this is a superior brew worthy of your attention. This week, Rochefort Trappist 10. This is one of three beers from the Rochefort stable, and, despite the numeral, it's a dark 11.3% beer, with rich flavours of malt, chocolate, grass, and with touches of plum and licorice, all topped off with a light brown head and rich aroma. Rochefort comes from the Notre Dame Abbey of St. Remy, and has been a monastery since 1230. Although it hasn't been an easy ride, with the French Revolution, secularism, world wars, and several changes of ownership in the interim. Consequently, the abbey can only trace a direct line back to 1887. A similar story is true of the brewery, although there are recordings of beer being made here as far back as 1595. The modern brewery, however, began shortly after the Second World War, in 1952. The other two Rochefort beers are the 6 and the 8, which come in at 7.5% and 9.2% ABV respectively. The 6 is the lighter beer, with a red amber colour with malt sugar aroma nose and a slight pepper to the taste, while the 8 is a deep brown beer with fruit and malt tastes and a tang of sweetness and plum. All three are recommended and significantly different to other beers in the genre, so it's worth a side-by-side comparison so you can truly appreciate the brewing differences that go on between this and other Belgian beers. But of the three they do, it's the Rochefort 10 that I favour, and it's why I'm awarding it this week's Try Before You Die. Okay, that wraps it up for this week. To give us a tasting of your opinions, you can email us on thebeercrate@gmail.com. If you prefix the subject line with two colons, you can be sure to avoid the spam filters. Remember to enjoy everything from the Beer Crate safely and responsibly, so you can be back here with us next week. Until then, cheers. Has been released under the Creative Commons Attribution, No Commercial, No Derivatives version. See www.thebeercrate.com for details.